But I think I said use the Tahoes as your 10% over 30, because you can sell those in F-150s. And good morning.
Hey guys, it's Jay.
What's up, Jay Bird?
No, hi, this is Doug.
Got Doug. I hear Steve. Who else is on the line?
Ramon's on.
Ramon. Doug, Brandy, Steve.
Yeah, Ramon. 13 Mercedes E350. Be curious on this one. $7,300 back and forth.
Ready for active listening.
Yeah. Leopold, that one.
Everybody, I heard Vance on the call.
Everybody, Jeff, Jeremy, Vance, Ramon, Peter, Brandy, and Steve are in the conference room. Doug is on the call. And is it just you, or is Roop joining?
Roop is not. I'm filling in for Roop today. So
big shoes.
Yeah. Big shoes. So
fill those size 7.
That's right. That's a man size 7 there, Steve. That's a man size 7. So, how are you guys? It hasn't been too terribly long since I saw you guys, but we'll get started. So, I just want to check in first off with you guys. It sounds like most of you guys are in the same room, so we probably won't have any issues with having to mute phones or anything like that. But if you need to, you can hit, I think it's *6 to mute your phone if you have any background noise or anything like that. So, wanted to quickly just check in overall on implementation plan. So, hopefully you guys are making some progress. We're a little over halfway through the quarter. So hopefully weekly practices, you guys are still doing, keeping the discipline on that. You know, your weekly focusing, keeping up with attending your structural meetings, dynamic agendas, those things. You know, probably would like to encourage you guys to continue to post to the e-journal. Looks like we had some good activity over the last couple of weeks, but would like to continue to get some sharing there. So overall, just to open us up, you know, any overall wins or sharing that anybody would like to do about any of the practices or questions, anything up for you guys this week?
Well, I thought it was interesting that you actually, when I post, first off, I posted to the e-journal, but I did the 5-minute prep, which was really great. I did what you kind of said that you do. I printed out like 10 copies of it, and I have it on my file cabinet behind my desk so I can turn around and grab one. And I've used it twice this week. But I thought it was interesting that you actually asked how long did it take you, because I didn't even think about the discipline of making it 5 minutes. Yes, like, because I had probably started that 5 minute prep 30 minutes prior to my phone call. I might have taken, you know, a lot more time with it or whatever, and I kind of intentionally, I mean, have you ever timed that or anything like that, or is it just...
No, I specifically asked that. Just a lot of times it actually takes less than 5 minutes. I mean, we call it 5 minutes of prep, but and 5 minutes just kind of goes by real quick when you do it. So
yeah.
It was really just to see, was it kind of right at the 5 minute mark, or did it actually get it done maybe a little bit quicker? But it's such a quick activity. That was kind of really the reason for asking
okay.
that. But to your point, you could probably spend as much time on it as you want, but the whole idea of it is, hey, I've got to quickly get kind of calibrated and centered to go into something that I may be rushing to. Take 5 minutes. It's very, very quick. You can do it in two or three. Get your thoughts down and go. So.
Well, I really liked it. It did work. It took me six
awesome.
Minutes, but probably because I was overthinking it.
That's okay. We'll take 6 minutes. Six minutes is okay. So.
When you think about it, the things that we've been talking about with regards to the CEO,
mm-hmm.
and it's in essence the same practice that we talked about, you know, with them having purpose on their calls.
Hey, Jay, this is Ramon. You know, after we met last week, and I didn't post to the e-journal with that, that's something that I definitely need to improve on. You know, I had a meeting with Esther and a couple guys out of Recon and West about, you know, like customer care costs and things like that. And Steve had sent out an email the previous week about some ideas and things like that. And so what I did was I took the meat of his email and I, before going into the meeting, I sent that out prior to us meeting, some things to think about, come prepared to the meeting. And then I went back for my five-minute prep just to make sure that I was, you know, mentally aligned to go in and be able to control the meetings to keep things from going, you know, sideways. It worked for me, but I found more value in sending out, if you will, a dynamic agenda of topics, to things to discuss. That helped me gain more control, as well as the five-minute prep calibrated me, because sometimes I think that, you know, when we don't go in aligned mentally, we will allow ourselves to get distracted, you know, from just the body of the content that starts to flow around the room. So
yeah.
Putting those pieces together helped me stay on track.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's and I would say I love that you did both. Knowing the energy around the dynamic agenda and the management there. If you've got the dynamic agenda, it's not always necessary to do 5 minutes of prep. You can do them together. You can do them both independently. You know, the dynamic agenda piece is probably the more leveraged activity, because it's got more detail, it's more structure. But I do like the application, Ramon, of not only did I send out the dynamic agenda so we're all on the same page, you actually kind of use the 5 minutes of prep to just get yourself kind of aligned and have the right energy to drive the meeting. And that sometimes can be a bigger challenge than even anything else, which is just how do I show up inside the meeting to control the flow of the conversation and the energy to kind of get through all the productive things that we need to. So I think that's really awesome.
One thing that I found was that, and not just trying to predetermine what's going to happen in a meeting, but sometimes you know the different personalities that go into certain meetings, and people will come into a meeting with their own agenda
mm-hmm.
because they might feel like the topic is basically attacking them or exposing them. And so that's the main reason I had to do my 5 minutes of prep, because knowing the different personalities and knowing you know, because you predefine the outcome, what you want, what the expectation is coming out of it. And so you have to make sure that you stay mentally alive so that people don't take you off track of what the intended purpose is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I found it useful. Just preparing myself to be derailed, basically, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah, you're, and that's really actually a great thing. That's, you know, we talk about recalibration, and that's really what recalibration is about. You're gonna get knocked off. The faster you can get back to that center state, you know, the better you're gonna show up, the better energy you're gonna have, you know, the more presence you're gonna have inside of a meeting in order to get those things accomplished. In the amount of, you know, the allotted amount of time and get to the outcomes that you want. Awesome. Anybody else? Thanks,
yeah,
Ramon.
This is Peter. I had a win yesterday with a meeting that we had, basically reviewing some low-grossing vehicles and some high-grossing vehicles. I didn't officially do a five-minute prep, but I did a prep, but it wasn't in the format that it probably should have been, so it's win and a loss there. But really what I did was I took about 10 minutes before our meeting just to jot down the most important points of the meeting. And Ramon was in there, the buyers were in there, Jeff was in there. And both Ramon and I feel were pretty well prepared, and we laid out very key points. And the reason I feel it was productive is because, one, Lear says he felt it was a very productive meeting, and also we brought up statistics that Johnny wasn't even aware of, and it really seemed to be an aha moment for him, some of the things that we were able to point out to him. Just by taking the 5 to 10 minutes that I took to really lay out the key points, and that's where I really see the value. Is that we had a meeting where it was so productive. And it was, you know, maybe 45 minutes tops, but something that could really change the direction of the company just by being prepared for it. So I know Ramon was prepared as well, and just taking that time before the meeting was very key to having an efficient meeting.
Yeah.
Just build on that, Jerry. I guess I was chairing the meeting. We started the meeting, stated the specific purpose of the meeting, but Ramon and Peter had both been tasked with preparing analytics about a week in advance. So both came, as Peter said, with very succinct summaries of their findings backed up by, a confirmation that it was analytically based. So it was really easy to just say, okay, Peter, what are the key findings? Have a brief discussion around it, and we covered, this could have been a 2 or 3 hour ramble easy, you know, and in the past it may well have been. But we ended up with de-resignations in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Explosion, some emotion, you know, I'm sure some expletives, but we ended up with three specific real agreements on that impact our buying strategy, and the most important thing was it was a real everybody nodding saying, yeah, that makes total sense, yeah, we've got to do it, you know, and it was a real win to have consensus across Recon, Peter in pricing, and Leah and Johnny all saying, yeah, great, all agree, we'll do it, you know. And it lasted, I think, under 40 minutes. It was like 30 minutes,
and we just had to talk for another 10
Wow, that's awesome. I mean, there's so much there. I mean, I love all the integration of what you guys are starting to put some of these pieces together, things like that we did in a structural meeting, a dynamic agenda. You know, hey, I'm prepping myself to go into a meeting with the right kind of mindset and orientation. Some of the effective meeting practices are being used in there, a problem-solving mentality, and now we're taking what could have been, let's just be conservative and say a two-hour meeting, getting to the right decision with really good data inside of 45 minutes. I mean, that seems pretty significant. So I think you guys should give yourselves a pat on the back for that. That's really good. Has anybody noticed now that you've, you know, Peter, Ramon, you know, Jeff, anybody, now that you're having some more effective meetings, are you starting to notice when you attend meetings that maybe you're not as prepared or are not being kind of run in the same way? How are you feeling inside of those meetings?
Oh, I attended a PTA board meeting. Can I take that one? And after you've been running effective meetings, and not only that, but the president of the PTA board is in Sagan. So he and I, he's got his 2x2 and all this kind of just randomly. He works for Interstate Batteries and is in Sagan. But no one comes to the meeting prepared. I mean, there's like no treasurer report. Well, what can we do? We can't do anything, you know, without that. And I think he and I kind of had a little bit of powwow afterwards because we had already joked about 5 months ago. We both found out we were both in Sagan on the PTA board. And we've tried to do what we can. He's tried to, like, send agendas and stuff. But these, and I understand it's volunteers, but really when you look at something like 5 minutes prep, I mean, we kind of joked about that the other day. Like, well, don't they have 5 minutes of prep or don't they have, you know, this? But it is really annoying to feel like you didn't accomplish anything when you're putting your time, you know, volunteer time out there or whatever. You put an hour out there and to feel like we didn't get very, you know, very far with it. And that also happened in the culture meeting that I have once a month. It took me probably, you know, until March to get that one where, you know, especially, and I hate to be stereotypical here, but for three women meeting, you know, about something like culture, it could just go anywhere all the time. And I had to get that one reined in so that it met the time limit and we actually had actions coming out of the meeting. But
yeah.
Another one, we had a phone call on Monday that, I mean, it was a waste of an hour. The meeting was set at 3:30. They changed it to 4, no agenda, and asked Brandy right before the meeting is, what's the purpose of this call? She's like, oh, they want to ask you questions. Well, I got on the phone, and they started off,
not asking questions.
What questions do you have? And it was literally like, it was...
It is a potential vendor. Like, it almost gave, and it's someone I've worked with before, but it was such a bad taste in my mouth with how ill-prepared it was, you know, moving it, all right, okay, but then sitting down and it was like radio silence for a little while and I felt like I had to be the rescuer there to kind of go because they had told me.
You ran out.
I know, I did, I ran out.
You ran out of me. You didn't rescue.
Jeff sent me a text that I had to do something right then. So then I leave Steve in a shitty meeting with people he doesn't know while I go handle something for Jeff Austin.
On a Monday.
On a Monday.
But I've been out 3 days prior to that at a conference.
Steve, I owe you a beer or something. I really do.
Yeah, just leave me off the conference call. But no, you could see the difference between a well-prepared one and one that just, hey, can you just attend? And when you show up, I never noticed the impact, because a lot of times I would just show up and try to, okay, let's get the best out of this meeting. Now, I'm to the point where if I don't have a dynamic agenda up front or there's no prep, I disengage. And then what I'm going to do moving forward is just cancel the meeting ahead of time, because it's truly a waste. If there's no dynamic agenda up front and there's no prep work done, I can't bring my best. I can't offer anything. And so it's a big eye-opening to see the differences between well-run meetings and ones that aren't prepared for. And so the best thing I can do is just excuse myself from those and find something else to reinvest the time, because it does make a big difference.
One of the things I think makes the biggest difference, or for me anyway, is to start with a specific purpose. If you start with a specific, or for me anyway, if I start with a specific purpose, the agenda becomes obvious. So often, you know, you put agenda items down. What are we really trying to achieve? You know, and is it an agreement meeting? Is it a discussion meeting? Is it a, you know, what are we trying to do?
That's what the 5-minute prep does. It starts with what's your outcome, right? And you start writing your outcome, and then you go to key objectives, which is instead the other way around.
And I've been, I don't know if you say bad habit, I've always been in a habit of doing a 5-minute prep mentally. But then you get into the meeting and it gets lost. So the simple fact of writing it down or creating it on a document, it's huge.
Right.
Yeah.
I think, that's the other way, Jay. I think for me, speaking on what Jeff and I talk about quite a bit is, you know, on the smaller level for our CEOs, is taking that preparation on phone calls with customers. What's the desired outcome of this phone call? And I've been, you know, really coaching on that type of preparation, doing a lot of active listening with these guys, you know, just going through, you know, really just going through the questions and trying to clarify, you know, some confusion there, just to, that way we have a clear vision of what is this phone call going to sound like, you know, what can we expect to take from this phone call, and how can we move forward throughout the deal. So that's been, it's been good. I know there's a learning curve, you know, with the CEOs, but I see how effective it can be, and these guys already see some of their phone calls, how more efficient they're getting with some of these deals. So that's a small one for me.
That's awesome. That's a great application. Do a 5-minute prep. Use that on call customers. Because then you, what's my desired outcome?
Exactly.
To get an app or to get an appointment or to clarify, you know. That's,
draw objections.
Yeah, that's
a big thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love that.
I was just going to say, to just add on to that, one of the things that I've been focusing on with the pod is, what's the end? Where do you want this to go? And generally, it's to move that customer to the next step, whether it's a finance application, whether it's, come in, send me your stipulations, you know, things like that. You know, so where you have that, the purpose of it, and what is the anticipated end to that? What do you want out of that? And direct that call towards that. And we're starting to see some success with that, you know, that keeping the end in mind.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, and that's awesome. And, you know, again, I want to draw this together. You guys, this team, you guys have control over the things that you attend, the meetings that you attend, in helping model that one for the rest of the organization, hold each other accountable, and yet you have a certain kind of responsibility too, I think, to, you know, start trying to push some of these things down into the organization as well. But it's really this group here that can help hold each other accountable, help control the things like, hey, I'm showing up to the meeting, you didn't send out a dynamic agenda, you know, why not, you know, let's go ahead and do a quick 5 minutes of prep and check in before we even start the meeting. I mean, there's ways you can put these things on the ground to help get the most out of your meetings. Because you guys have such a limited amount of time, and you've got to, you know, deal with, you know, a lot of the customer facing things. So making the most of that time where you guys are together, I think will be really effective. So love all the applications, love all the wins. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that, is really exciting to see. So, like to continue the sharing, the thinking, the and how you guys are using these tools. And that's really what I want you guys to be sharing too on the e-journal, is just where you tried something. You know, maybe it worked, maybe it didn't. Share that so that everybody else can get the same shared experience of what you're going through the e-journal. I know you guys are pretty close and talk a lot and are probably talking about this stuff, but I think trying to write it down and putting it out there will be good for everybody. So I want to shift gears into the meat of our call, which will be around active listening and doing some actual active listening practice. So we're going to participate and I'm ask everybody to kind of get geared up and centered around participating in this, what we call the active listening game. What we're going to do, I'm going to kind of just kind of run through the process here in a second, but we're actually going to kind of, I'm going to ask somebody to volunteer to be the speaker, somebody to volunteer to be the active listener, and then everyone else is going to participate in the role of the observer. And what we're going to do is start an active listening practice with the active listener and the speaker. I'm going to kind of give you guys a few minutes to engage that, and then I'm going to kind of call time out, and we're actually going to change the role of the active listener. So let's say, for example, I ask Vance to be the active listener and Peter to be the speaker. I'm going to give them 3 to 5 minutes or so to engage the practice. I'm going to call time out, and then we're going to shift and pick a different active listener to continue that with Peter. And we'll probably do a couple of rounds of that, and then we'll probably pause and debrief. And if we've got some additional time, we may do another round of that where we pick a different different speaker. So does anybody remember from our coaching last week, what's the one fundamental orientation you want to be in when you're practicing active listening?
Be orientated on the other person.
Yep.
Not on yourself.
Right. It's not about me. It's a seek to understand orientation. Or as we talked about that, a way to is I'm only focused on the other person. It has nothing to do with me. So that's about listening without deciding, being kind of non-judgmental. You want to be curious about what the other person, really curious about the other person, about their story, about what they have to say. You then want to avoid the temptation to listen autobiographically, which is really about, oh, I'm trying to connect to your shared experience, to an experience and telling you about my experience with that. Oh, you know, you're interested in, you know, this particular movie. Oh, yeah, I saw that movie as well. So you're trying to make it about you, not about them. Again, undivided attention. You want to focus on the other person. You want to make sure that they feel heard, and you want to make sure they feel understood. Neutral tone of voice. Very, very helpful when you're practicing active listening. You don't want to have a overly, you know, emotional tone of voice. You really want to avoid that. And then we're on the phone here, but some of you guys are in the room together. But when you're actually practicing this kind of face-to-face with somebody, you really want to try to maintain a relaxed posture and get some eye contact with them. I mean, you know, it's not a staring competition, but you want to try to maintain eye contact. You don't want to be, you know, looking away. They'll pick up that you're not really engaged in the conversation if you're constantly kind of distracted or looking away or looking at other things. So we talked about this last time. There's really kind of 5 main steps of active listening. You know, questioning, going through the open doors, simple open-ended questions, reflecting that back. So restating in your words what you heard that person say so that they feel like you've actually heard them. It's not agreeing with it. It's just reflecting it back. It's kind of, hey, I recorded everything that you said, and I'm going to play it back to you. You know, empathizing, again, getting them to understand that you actually have a sense of their feelings. Again, they're going to have feelings whether you agree with those feelings or not, but they need to feel like you've connected to those and you understand what they're feeling. Then obviously clarifying is the second to last step, which is really about, and this is more applicable in controversial active listening or really highly charged emotional active listening, but really it's about how do I get clarity on maybe a complex point or something that you didn't maybe quite articulate to me in a way that I got so that I could reflect it back to you. I want to ask clarifying questions. And then really summarizing is the last phase. So letting them know that you heard them, that you empathized with them, that you have clarity, and it gives them a sense of that closure. So for round one, I think I'd really like to focus on really the two main pieces, which is getting into that orientation and just asking those open-ended questions before you try to reflect or empathize or clarify. And if you feel a need to do that, that's great, but really if you can focus on being curious about the other person and asking those open-ended questions. So who wants to volunteer first to be my speaker? Oh, I'm going to...
I'll do it. Okay, it's Peter.
Peter. All right, Peter, you're going to be my speaker. And I'm going to ask... Ramon, would you want to be our active listener first off?
Not listening.
What would you say?
Not really?
No, I'm fine. I knew you were going to say Ramon. I'm
trying
to So now I want, you know, Doug, Brandy, Steve, Jeff, Jeremy, Vance, I want you guys to play the role of, you need to be paying attention, listening to the conversation, because when I call time out and pull Ramon out of the active listener role, I'm going to nominate one of you guys to jump in and continue the conversation with Peter. So I don't want to make this a heavy conversation or anything like that. So, Ramon, why don't you take about 60 seconds and think about a good kind of open-ended question that's, you know, something that you want to, you know, share or find out about Peter. So it can be something, you know, what's his hobby? What did he do this weekend? Anything relatively minor. Doesn't have to be a super deep topic of conversation. So Peter, actually I probably should have Peter start this. So Peter, why don't you think about something that would be a good topic that you're comfortable discussing with the group, that, you know, so it's a hobby, you know, maybe a challenge, something you've learned, something you like to do.
Not soccer, football.
Not soccer, football? Peter, you got a good one?
He's in football.
He's still football.
We did this. So I need to lead with the first question, right, that opens the floodgates, right?
Well, he needs to pick the topic, and then...
Football, okay, listen.
Make sure you listen. I'll make it about you.
So what... So what about football? So
favorite football.
Anything that Ramon wants to ask me.
Ask him why he chose.
Yeah, Peter, I'm interested in your perspective and why you chose the topic of football.
Well, it's my favorite sport. I think more than any sport, it teaches a lot of valuable lessons in life, a lot of teamwork, a lot of work ethic, discipline, game filming. There's so many things about the sport that I believe are translatable to life. And it was something that was really important to me growing up, and I feel that really helped shape me and to who I became in life.
So tell me more about the specifics about football that teaches you about life.
Well, I mean, growing up as a kid, and I started playing when I was organized football when I was 7, and, you know, having the coaches there teaching you the value of hard work, teaching you why
running sprints and running laps and doing push-ups is important to developing in the sport, but it's more than just that. Like I said, you can translate that into any part of your life. If you want to be successful, there's certain prep work that you have to do. You know, obviously in football, the desired outcome is, you know, come game day, you're going to come out with a victory. But there's so many things that go into that. Like I said, the strength, it's practicing the plays, it's working out, and doing those things, if you do it correctly, if you do all the prep correctly, you're going to be victorious. So you can take those principles into any aspect of your life, and if you apply that same sort of discipline, you can be successful in other aspects of your life as well.
You mentioned that you enjoy most of the interaction with the coaches teaching you those different things. Tell me more about that. Was it more of the interaction with the coach, or was it the lesson of completion of those specific sprint drills and things like that? What impacted you the most?
I think it was the coaching. I mean, there were several coaches growing up from Pop Warner through middle school, high school, that really developed me as a person, not just on the field, but really taught me how to be a better person. And to me, that's the most important thing that I learned. I love the sport, obviously, but just being able to grow and mature. You know, obviously, when you're a kid, you don't necessarily understand those things. But you know, at every stage in my life, I could see where I was applying a lot of what they coached me on outside the football field. And to me, the coaching was the absolute most important thing. When I was a kid, I loved winning more than anything. There was one example, it was actually in a different sport, but we lost in the playoffs, and you know, all the kids were talking about, you know, where's the snacks, and I was the only kid that was going crazy, you know, screw the snacks, we lost. And, you know, my coach just pulled me aside and explained, you know, the importance of learning from that experience, and it wasn't about losing, it was about, you know, what can you learn, what can you do better. And that stuck out to me the rest of my life. You know, I still don't like losing, but I know now, you know, because you can learn from losing. You can get better.
Right. So it seemed like you had a great value for the direction and the instruction from your coaches. Can you tell me more about, like, the interaction? How do you use that now? The things that you learned then, how do you use that now?
That's a good question. I mean, a lot of things that I learned growing up in sports, I really tried to apply to my younger brothers. They're not as young anymore, but, you know, when they were growing up and when they were kids and I was in high school, I was able to almost be a coach to them and help teach them a lot of things that I learned growing up. And even now, you know, a couple of my brothers are still in college, and I try to give them a lot of insight and direction that I didn't necessarily have during college, but I can give to them now. And I don't think if I hadn't grown up playing sports, but specifically football, the coaching I got, I don't know if I'd be as confident becoming a coach to my younger brothers if I didn't have that same sort of direction growing up.
So sports was
time out. So great job. So I want Jeremy to jump in here now, and thank you, Ramon, and take over the role of active listener.
So did you have one specific coach that really drove this stuff? Because you sounded like the coaches were really impactful.
I had a lot of coaches, but there are probably maybe two or three that were really impactful. There was one in Pop Warner. It was actually one of my best friend's father's. He was always real supportive. He was like a second father to me. And really for him, it was more than football. it was really helping develop me as a person. But even in high school, I had another coach. He wasn't even my same position coach. He was a lineman coach. I was a linebacker. But I was always a little bit smaller. I was one of the smallest linebackers. But, he was always getting with me after practice, and he was a linebacker himself, but he was a lineman coach. And he'd teach me some extra things, and he'd work out with me, take extra reps. He was always encouraging me in the locker room, even though he wasn't my direct coach. And, to have someone who's there to encourage you specifically, he encouraged a lot of people, but I know he really took a even more focus on me because he saw how hard I worked. It was really encouraging to have somebody, even though I wasn't as big as some of the other players, to have a coach that really was there motivating and coaching me.
So just the fact that he, took extra time and really spent, encouraged you. Was he a hard coach, or was he a...
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a mix. He's definitely, if you're out of line, you're gonna run some sprints, and if you're not working out as hard, he's gonna get in your face. But that's the kind of thing, it's where that it has some meaning. You see the end result. If he's gonna chew your ass out and you get in your face about something, later on he'll come back and explain, this is why this is important, this is what was happening, you can do better, this is why you need to do better, and you can do better. So it wasn't just the motivating aspect, and it wasn't just, about making you run laps and stuff, it was about teaching you why it's important to do these things. And, he would do that to a lot of different players, and that's really what helped us become successful. We really learned why all this stuff that we were doing was important. It wasn't just about, lifting and running weights and running plays over and over again. It was about getting to our desired outcome of winning. And, that kind of coaching really helped us as a team, but me individually really improved.
Interesting that you say that.
All right. So, Tom, great.
It's a really interesting story, Jay.
I know. So I want to get another round in, but I want to do a quick kind of couple-minute debrief here. So what did anybody else that was not, Ramon or Jeremy notice about that conversation? Did you notice anything that Ramon did, Jeremy did, Peter did?
I was just interested. I really thought it went way more below the surface than I was expecting when they first said we were going to talk about football. I really expected it to be about favorite teams and why you chose those teams or why you enjoy football as a spectator sport. So the personal aspect of it and where that continued to go was, I think I don't even know at what point. I mean, I guess Peter kind of started off with his answer of why he chose football, and you got the personal aspect of it, and then Ramon kept it more focused on, Peter than the sport. But I thought that I feel like you could have actually removed football after a while and just said we're seeing how Peter's, a lot of his values were shaped.
Awesome, yeah, so went a lot deeper, very quick. So good. Anybody else? Doug, Steve,
yeah,
Vance.
No, this is Doug. Well, this is Doug. I was thinking, initially was thinking is kind of like what Brandy was, that, oh, I'm sure this is going to be, who's your favorite team? But as the story unfolded, you could see that Ramon was really seeking to understand. I think he was in the right position, and he asked great open-ended questions. About what Peter had said about life lessons, game throwing, and looking at the two areas that we were really focusing in on, that I thought he had set himself up, because I know Ramon's a big football fan, and it could have been very easy for him to identify with everything that Peter was saying and be able to insert himself And I thought it showed great restraint that he held back. And I can't see his face, so he's probably laughing right now.
So Jeremy or Ramon, what is your perspective?
Well, when Peter went, when he went where he went and he started talking about coaching, because I could have easily attached to the conversation and start talking about teams, but the reason I didn't, because it allowed me to back off and learn more about Peter and to why he was into it the way he was. And although I did have a personal connection to that, because the coaching and the people that are involved was the reason I was so much into football, other than coming from a winning city. But it was the coaching. It was the coaching that actually saved me from going down different paths in life. And so I was interested. I don't know Peter's background, economical and things like that, but inner city kid myself, those are the things that pulled a lot of guys who made it out of there out, with the coaching, the interaction, the lack of, you know, some absent fathers and things like that. And so I was just seeking to get a better perspective from Peter, and that was just me assuming that he didn't come from the same background I did. So I was, that's what made me curious.
For me,
what about you, Jeremy?
For me, I more than one time I had to resist the urge to try to relate, because some of the things he was saying were, you know, very relatable to me. And rather than, you know, jump in and tell my story, I found, you know, a couple of times in my head I just said, wait, you know, I'm trying to listen and learn about Peter and not jump in with my, you know, how those stories related to me. And so that, you know, just if you're not in the drill, you know, you could really just jump out of that, and then all of a sudden you've derailed the moment. So I think that was kind of an interesting thing that popped in my head. The other thing is, I noticed trying to form an open-ended question is probably a good thing to practice anyway, because it's so easy just to ask a yes or no,
yeah.
Or it's so easy to jump in before Peter's really finished his thought, because you hear something that, oh, that, you know, I'd really like to learn more about that, but then he kept elaborating, and if I'm already trying to ask my next question,
it makes you pay attention to him,
yeah.
Because I was waiting for him to get to a comfortable stop, so I didn't jump in and stop him,
mm-hmm.
because he was setting up the next question. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed, yeah, that was a really big observation that's a great one. When you ask the open-ended question, the amount of doors that, you know, in this case, Peter offered up, you know, you asked him why, you know, what was it about football that he liked, and he said, oh, it was my favorite sport. I learned a lot of valuable lessons. I got a good work ethic. I learned game filming. It was important to me growing up. It shaped who I was. Well, there's like seven right there. And then you said, okay, well, what were the valuable lessons? And he said, well, I started it at seven. You know, I got hard work. I learned why running and exercise is important. Translated into success for me. Helped me learn to prep, you know, correctly and apply these things into my life. I mean, right there. So he just kept going and kept giving you doors and kept giving you doors. And had you stopped him two questions in, you wouldn't have gotten those other things. Oh, did we just lose somebody?
I think Doug's on his way.
Doug's not an athlete.
Doug's like, I've had it with this active listening. So let's try to get one more kind of short round in. I want to see if I can get maybe Vance to be our speaker and Brandy to be our active listener and ask the open-ended questions. So, Vance, I'm putting you on the spot a little bit there, but if you've got something that maybe you can get us rolling on, something that you're, again, you're comfortable sharing with the group, a good topic or something you want to share, and then let Brandy kind of build off that. So,
yeah. Gabby wants to talk. I mean, Gabby.
Thanks a lot.
Brandy wants to talk about my.
Why is Brandy?
Yeah,
Oh, that's a good. I'm open to it.
Soon to be a daddy.
Yeah, soon to be daddy.
You're comfortable with that?
Yeah.
So, Dan, you're expecting a child. What kind of emotions do you have around the fact that you're going to be, you know, caring for a child?
Pretty excited, I would say. I mean, whenever we found out, it wasn't, I mean, of course it was surprise and shock in the moment, but it wasn't that feeling of, you know, oh my gosh, what do I do now? It was more like, well, I mean, I'm really prepared for it. I mean, as a you know, as an adult, I felt like you know, I'm as prepared as I could ever be. And that was, you know, the biggest part to me, even when telling, you know, Kathy's parents, you know, about the situation. There's no type of, like, you know, scared bone in my body where I felt like I don't know what I'm going to do here. It was all just ready to go. Like, I'm ready for this. I'm more excited for having the opportunity than anything. So that was pretty good, just finding out.
Has it changed, like, the excitement around it? Has it changed the dynamic of your relationship at home?
Yeah, it has. It has, I mean, a ton, just from the way that I give time to Gabby now I realize that, you know, I need to be, I need to take away, you know, from my personal time and quit being so selfish with the time that I give to Gabby, because it's going to be, you know, this is my family now, I have a child. So it's changed the dynamic of it quite a bit, to where now I don't think about myself first. Now I make sure I'm thinking about, you know, Gabby, and soon to be, you know, I have a child running around. So it's changed quite a bit, and I'm just, you know, just day by day, just still going through it, and, you know, making sure I'm aware that, you know, it's not only me anymore. It's, you know, me, Gabby, and, of course, my kids.
Are you going to find out, like, going into that, are you going to find out the sex of this child, or?
Yeah, we're actually supposed to go tomorrow to find out, so that's pretty exciting. You know, that's one thing I'll make sure I want to do, and everybody was asking us, of course, the same question. Are you going to find out? Are you guys going to have a party, or, you know, surprise party to let everybody know what it is? But, yeah, it's a big thing for me to find out, just so I could, you know, prepare for it and we could get everything set up like we want to. But
do you, like, have hopes that you're going to have?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, I'm really confident I'm going to have a boy. I haven't thought about a situation where it's not a boy. I mean, anything I've been thinking about is has to be like, this is a boy. I mean, thinking about sports, you know, thinking about the talks that I have and I share with my family. I mean, it's just all revolved around the boy. But I have thought about the girl. I've been like a father to my younger sisters who don't have their dad in their life. And I was thinking, you know, if it's a girl, it wouldn't be bad. I'm already in the stage with one of them where she's like 16. I'm having the uncomfortable conversations. So it's kind of weird, but if it did go down that path, it would be a bad thing.
So have you started to think about, are there any things you can think about that you want to do differently as a parent than how you were raised?
Yeah, I mean, for one, I mean, kind of with Peter and we talked about earlier with sports, I mean, I didn't have father growing up, so that was probably the biggest thing is being there, being able to, you know, have those conversations that I never got to, you know, share with the father. So that was probably the biggest thing that I knew right away when I was going to be a dad, that, you know, there's no question in my mind that I'm in this, you know, for the long run, that I'm going to do what's right, and I will be here no matter what it takes. So that was the big part of it. And then still growing up, you know, at a young age, there still wasn't a lot of the conversations that that I needed as a young adult to kind of, you know, mentally prepare for what, you know, my next part of my life is going to be as an adult. And that's something that I made a change with, like I said, the way I raised my my younger sisters on, you know, being prepared, you know, having a plan. And those are things that I will, you know, consistently do with my kid just to make sure that they're prepared for life as it comes day by day.
So even after that, I mean, I think it's you're still saying you don't feel fearful about it. So is there anything that you do have that you fear for, you know, bringing a life into the world? I mean, like a worry or...
The only worry that I have, honestly, is religion. Gabby's parents are very religious. Her dad's a deacon, so that's just something right now. I'm just like, we just don't get along on the religion piece of it. You know, I don't favor Catholic churches. And you know, I'm all for, you know, giving our kid you know, his faith, and you know, I know that's a big thing, but that's the only piece that I don't want to have to deal with that. I wish I could avoid it, and it's just the only thing in the back of my mind every day where I constantly remind Gabby, no Catholic churches. Stuff like that.
All right, so thank you for sharing that, Vance. We're getting close to the end of our time, so I want to make sure we have a chance to just kind of wrap up. But quick debrief. Vance, what was that experience like for you?
Pretty good. I think, you know, she went below the surface quite a bit there. She got some good information about, you know, how I was raised and, you know, continue to carry the conversation on through the doors I opened, and that was pretty good. And she continued to go back and, you know, remind me of what we just talked about, and that's how she would frame the next question.
Jeff, what about you, Brandy? Yep.
Sorry, go ahead, Brandy.
Oh, I just I think I did a better job this time than I did with Jeff the first time, but it still is. You know, it's very mentally, as much as I was listening to him and I feel like I learned, like, so much, I felt really on the spot because I wasn't trying to think of my next question. So when the conversation would die, it was like there would be, like, 15 questions in my head that I wanted to ask, you know, and trying to pick the open-ended one, because usually I am thinking about my next question earlier. So, like, when he would finish, and I was like, okay, that's it. Now I have to ask him the question. Kind of, I felt like I stumbled a little bit there because, you know, because there are so many options, and you're trying to ask something that's not just yes or no.
Yeah, I was just going to ask a question. I noticed that the three of us who were listeners, we all, and this could be just part of the drill, but we all were interviewing. You know, do you have any tips on how to make it a little bit more, I mean, less like a formal interview? I noticed Brandy phrased all her questions with, so, and then kind of going, and Ramon said, tell me more about, you know, and I was kind of doing the same thing, too. You got any tips about, you know, how to make it a little less formal and make it a little more believable to the person who's being listened to?
Yeah, I mean, in this case, we kind of missed really the next level of, which is, you know, the reflecting, the empathizing, the clarifying piece. So part of the reason I want to do that is I wanted to do this exercise is just that. The art of asking good open-ended questions is harder than it sounds, because you're in the moment. So, you know, in Vance and Brandy's case, you know, Vance, they kind of started off about the, hey, you know, tell me a little bit about, you know, you're about to be a parent, you know, what's that experience like for you? And Vance kind of went through a set of things there. Well, a lot of doors were opened. And to be like, well, so tell me more about, you know, is a way to ask that. But saying, okay, so, you know, you said that, you know, you were prepared for that. So tell me what about what have you done to prepare for having a child? That is a way to ask that question. But with, you know, getting into the reflecting, the empathizing, the clarifying stages will make it feel less like an interview and more like a human kind of connection. And, you know, I wanted to play the safe role today and get you guys used to those open-ended questions. But really, when you get into that reflecting and empathizing piece, it's going to feel less like a like an interview. And part of this practice, part of it is, because it's about the other person, about you that seek to understand, high inquiry, it really is an interview on your part. So to make it feel less technical, that's where the getting the more empathy comes into it. So that's a great question.
Just an observation, Jay. I know it's something that Brandy and I have talked about before. It's something that I've been coached on a lot in the past in using these techniques. Don't feel compelled to explain your question. And it's something that you do particularly, Brandy. You know, you say, what about what I mean is, is it A or B, and so what you're doing is almost sort of limiting and feeling the need to explain the question as opposed to just saying, why is that?
Yep.
Why is that? Because, and you start to explain your question.
All three of us did that kind of kept dancing along the question, explaining it out.
So the more you can practice that, the better it gets. And the biggest area I've practiced this in is, and the easiest place to practice it is interviews. Mm-hmm. And okay, you're not in the empathizing mode like you would be with a relationship or a counseling or an employee or something, but in an interview it's a really easy setting to really practice open-ended questions on funneling down and really diving, because then if you practice that and are successful at it, you really uncover some pretty unknown depths about your candidate.
I think also where in our communication, I notice a lot where we all jump in and interrupt, we jump in real early and we don't let each other finish, and that you can feel that, like, all right, I can't even finish my statement without someone, I know that, or I get that, or what about, and so I think this is a good practice for as we talk, especially on the phone, that where you just get cut off, and that feels shut down a lot. So I think that's a good opportunity for us just to, I find that when I jump in too early, I miss things, right? And I think it's the ladder of inference, right? I think I know where the person's going, and sometimes you're right, but a lot of times you're wrong, and it wouldn't go in that direction, and so you really miss the mark a lot of times. And it's just literally another 30 seconds, right? I mean, it's not like you're cutting it off from, say, 5 minutes. You're jumping in, and if you just let it go another 30 seconds, it's hard.
Yep. So awesome. So great call. We're at our time, so I want to be respectful of that. If you've got additional takeaways or insights, go ahead and post them to the e-journal. Otherwise, I will be seeing you guys again next Wednesday for coaching. So look forward to it, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
All right, guys.
You want to sit in on that? Do you have anything you want to reinforce or add, John?
Who are you meeting?
The CEOs.